You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast after what was a decent enough weekend for Everton after a controversial 0-0 draw at home to Tottenham Hotspur on the weekend. I'm your host today, Sam Carroll, joined by Chris Beasley sitting beside me, and from home, Adam Jones and Dave Prentice. How are we all, lads?
We're all right, aren't we? We're in the booth here together.
Good, yeah, I'm liking this.
You two look really cosy together.
We're not social distancing, are we?
No, not at all. We look like we've came for a meal together at Frankie and Benny's. Frankie and Benny's food. Adam, you were at Goodison Park yesterday to see the 0-0 draw. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, it was loads better, wasn't it? At the end of the day, I mean, I don't think it could have got much worse than the end of that Watford game and the start of that Wolves game, to be fair, but it was just loads better from Everton at the end of the day. I mean, all that the fans wanted to see was, you know, a bit of commitment, bit of heart, bit of passion from the players. You know, these are all, you know, buzzwords, I suppose, but you know, sometimes they are just effective, and they are exactly the requirements that these players sort of need, and the kinds of things that you shouldn't really have to ask for, but you so often do have to ask for with this group of players, which is really strange. But yeah, they showed all that from the start. I think, you know, the whole side looked loads more organised as well, which I think has probably flown under the radar. Lots more defensively solid, really putting effort in all over the pitch. Lacking a bit of creativity, you have to admit, but you know, we're still missing key players up at the top end of the pitch, aren't we? In the likes of Decore and Calvert-Lewin, so you can kind of understand why there was maybe a little bit of a lack of creativity. And to be honest, these players are learning a new system as well, so it's a bit of a tough one to properly go into, I suppose, but. Yeah, like I think, all in all, it was much better in general, because I think essentially it couldn't really have got much worse.
Was that a proper Goodison atmosphere for you yesterday, Dave?
Yeah, it's the first decent Goodison atmosphere we've had for quite some time, to be honest, and it just shows you how the supporters will react to being given what should basically be. The very least you should expect from your footballers every week, which is attitude and commitment. But we don't appear to have seen that on a couple of occasions recently. So it was good to see that restored. Obviously, it helps when you've got a referee whose interpretation of the laws of the game is at odds with the people who are watching it. And that always adds an extra bit of spite to it as well. So I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it was a much, much better performance, as Adam says. A couple of, you know, sort of decent high spots. Don't think Jordan Pickford had a single save to make. I think he just took one, you know, sort of cross, and that was about it. And after the fairly appalling defending we've seen over the last couple of games, that was a massive, you know, sort of tick in the right box. And Fabian Delph, you know, so, you know, the new number eight. I mean, we've always known, you know, what a good player he can be. We just haven't seen it often enough because his body's let him down. So it was quite heartening, you know, sort of to see him actually producing a really decent performance. So, yeah, there were a lot more positives you could take from it, from negatives than in recent weeks. So, yeah, all in all, you know, I enjoyed it. It was a decent afternoon.
Let's get on and talk a little bit more about Fabian Delph. We were kind of talking about him earlier this morning together. Mm-hmm. Phil Kirkbride wrote in his Royal Blue column on Saturday morning that, you know, even if he was kind of outstanding until the end of the season, it's still more than likely that Fabian Delph would move on as a free agent. But he's got a real chance now to rewrite his own legacy in these last few months. And he's kind of got off to the perfect start with his last two appearances.
Yeah, I said, you know, it's like one and a bit perform, one and a bit matches, and you know, Everton taking just the 1 point for them. So let's not go overboard, but very encouraging considering, you know, he came in from the cold and, you know, he's been straight back at it. And it just shows you how far Everton have fallen in recent weeks. That something like that, just that basic desire and a bit of organisation goes a long way. But I'm saying, even if Fabian Delph hadn't had this last year or so with the injuries and the way things have gone, he'd probably be in a similar situation, a player of his age anyway, when he, you know, yeah, comes to the last year of his contract. Probably be looking to play as many games as possible and make as big an impact as possible to get another 1 year deal. And then that's the sort of way it goes, by time like a veteran player like he is. Yeah, there's still a chance for him to earn a 1 year deal if he does well between now and the end of the season. You know, Rafa could change his mind. He's already changed his mind on, you know, he was willing to let him go out the door at the start of the season, and now he's kept him on for this year. So, you know, it, like I said, it's up to him. First and foremost, staying fit, because that's been the big thing, isn't it? I don't think there's any real question marks over his pedigree. You know, he's an international player who's come from Manchester City, so that's not an issue. But it's just getting onto the pitch and doing that over a prolonged period. That'll be probably, if he has any chance, and there will be a chance if he does well, he could earn another year. But yeah, that's a big ask given what's happened already. But hopefully, maybe the injuries can be behind him. You know, there's obviously a quality player in there.
It all felt very surreal yesterday, Adam, didn't it? Seeing Everton tweeting out that Fabian Delph was man of the match for Everton against Spurs. It almost felt like we'd entered some kind of alternate universe. What was it about his performance that you think he did well? What was it he brought to the team yesterday that maybe we've been lacking?
He was such a calming influence. I think, you know, there were moments in the second half especially where, you know, it looked as if, you know, it was going to turn into some sort of a hectic performance, but Delph was kind of just like motioning to the rest of his teammates, you know, calm down, let's play our football the way we know that we can play. And it kind of got Everton back onto the offensive in the second half. And I think, you know, Rafa Benitez spoke about it in his pre-match press conference, you know, the kind of experience that Fabian Delph brings to that role. And I think he used that experience throughout, well, especially the first half. You know, you saw moments where, you know, Ben Godfrey and Michael Keane were picking up possession. Fabian Delph was always just showing for the ball. You know, it's simple things like that sometimes, you know, just showing for the ball, getting a pass off those two centre-backs and pushing Everton forwards, making a, you know, 5 or 10 yard pass to, you know, an Allen or Andros Townsend in front of him. You know, nothing really, you know, mind blowing or spectacular or anything like that. It was very much just doing the basics, but doing the basics really, really well. And then defensively, he was using his experience really well to get in the right sort of defensive areas. Like obviously we had the moments in the second half where Luka Dean's bombed forward and suddenly Spurs trying to hit us on the counter attack. Delph covers back at left back and he makes two fantastic interceptions in the space of about 10 seconds, which stopped Spurs potentially hitting us on the break. And, you know, fans will really, really appreciate that. He only got an hour of football, but you know, with the injury issues that he's had over the last probably well over a year, it was, you know, quite understandable that he wasn't going to get 90 minutes on this occasion. But, you know, it was very just, you know, it was just very simple experience stuff, and these are the kinds of things that we thought that Fabian Delph was going to be able to provide on a consistent basis when joining the club. You know, these are the kind of performances that we all thought were going to, but unfortunately, injuries have kind of stood in the way of that. But yeah, I don't think it was necessarily mind blowing or anything like that from Fabian Delph. It was just doing the basics absolutely right, and you know, sometimes that's just what you need, isn't it?
Cometh the hour, cometh the man. For so long of Fabian Delph's Everton career, it's kind of felt like wrong place, wrong time. But with the current kind of injury crisis that has afflicted the midfield, that this is probably his best opportunity now to fully show what he can do in Royal Blue, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a massive opportunity for him. I mean, I would describe his performance as Gareth Barry-esque. And that's a compliment, you know, because he was in the right place at the right time so many times. And that comes with, you know, football brain. How many times did he intercept, you know, so dangerous Tottenham passes in the first half? I count at least three or four just by being in the right place. The yellow card that he always takes was a decent one to take, to be honest, because it was a dangerous break by Tottenham, and it was a, you know, a typical tactical foul, if you like. But yeah, you worry about his fitness. I mean, he went down quite gingerly after taking a heavy challenge at one stage, and you think, oh dear, you know, so he's the kind of player that always seems to pick up injuries. But given like the state of the squad at the moment, and given the manager's reluctance to trust Jean-Philippe Gabamin, he is going to be very, very important over the next few weeks. I mean, let's face it, he actually decided he wants to play a centre-half in midfield for the last 10 minutes rather than Gabamin, which indicates that, you know, what he's seeing on the training pitch and what we saw in that first half at Wolves just isn't good enough from him. So, you know, it's there. You know, so it's up to Fabian Delph to try and prove that, you know, he can get a run of form and fitness. As Chris said earlier, you know, there's no questions about his pedigree, you know, because he is a very, very good footballer. Just his body keeps letting him down, and he wants an extra year. And I can understand why the club are a little bit reluctant to commit to that just yet, because they want to see if he can get a bit of a run of games under his belt and try and, you know, avoid these constant injuries he picks up. And it's not just one injury. It's like just an array of like odd injuries when it was his shoulder last time. So fingers crossed, you know, so things will be, you know, we'll go for him now. I mean, the manager did his bit. He played him for an hour. You'd have been tempted to leave him on a bit longer, such was his influence on the game, but he didn't. He gave him, you know, a rest for the last half an hour, which was sensible, prudent management. So they're giving him every opportunity to try and prove that he can be the player that we thought he could be. And how many times on this pod have we said we lack leadership, we lack a leader in the squad? And he is, you know, one of those players that can be a leader. So you throw him into the mix, Seamus Coleman into the mix, and suddenly you've got like a little bit more leadership in the squad, which is important. So yeah, fingers crossed, you know, this can be, you know, a belated, you know, sort of kickstart to Fabian Delph's career.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, from the good to the bad and the ugly, perhaps. Bees, looking back at the big talking point, the Richarlison penalty decision. Yeah. You know, we've seen, it kind of felt like VAR was being improved upon this season. You know, there was more of a message to referees to let things go, you know, and try not to overturn things unless there's a real clear and obvious error. And you can totally understand why Everton and the supporters would feel totally aggrieved in this situation that I just can't for the life of me. I've watched it 50 times. How on earth can that be deemed a clear and obvious error for the ref to overturn that decision?
Yeah. Michael Ball and I have discussed this morning. Obviously, that'd be Ballie's column later on. And both of similar minds, to be honest. It's one where it could be given and or not given, but it's certainly not clear and obvious having awarded the initial penalty that it then overturned. I mean, it's almost like a double hit for Everton, because in a pre-VAR era, you know, the penalty would have been awarded and that would have been it. But now, because of VAR, there was an opportunity that perhaps the referee could have played advantage, because Everton was still in a very good position there, and Richarlison might have ended up scoring anyway. So they've been denied twice with the decision being overturned, though clear and obvious. VAR is supposed to exist so we don't have the howlers, so we don't have, you know, when the, obviously we've got the goal line technology, that's separate, but you know, when it was just an obvious mistake, a really bad mistake from the referee to help them out. And this was something he'd seen in real time. He fought in real time. It was a penalty. So to be overturned, I mean, it's galling for Everton. Particularly, obviously, it was a very tight game and ended up being 0-0 anyway. It could have been the pivotal moment. I mean, Everton are going into that international break relieved that they're not going in on the back of four defeats. But, I mean, it could have been going in a much rosier position on a morale-boosting victory over Tottenham. And also, the fact that he got the ball for me, you know, that makes no odds, because he still clips him. He clips him. It was an interesting argument from Rapper, as he said, if he makes that challenge on the halfway line, then it's a foul. Well, I think if he does that challenge on the halfway line, what's he doing? swiping his hands around people's legs on the halfway line. I don't know, but yeah, I know you use that example when it's an outfield player does a foul in the air. You say, well, he'd be giving someone else the pitch. But yeah, he got the ball, yeah, but he also got the man. So for me, it's a penalty. And like you say, whether you think it's a penalty or not, it's not that much of a howler to say that's a clear and obvious error that we've got to overturn. So yeah, that's an issue with VAR, which is ongoing.
It is really disappointing, Adam, isn't it? And I know you've wrote about it in your analysis this morning about how, you know, everyone was essentially just baffled by the performance of the referee. But VAR definitely, certainly at the start of the season, seemed to have been improved upon. It seemed to be a lot more fair, a lot more rational. And it's just really disappointing that it happened in that way yesterday. And, you know, to cap it all off then, Hugo Lloris ends up with the ball when Everton are in a great attacking position. The whole thing just doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
Well, that's it. Like you mentioned the fact that VAR does seem to be improved from the start of this season, and I do kind of agree with that. You know, we're not seeing the same sort of marginal offsides that everybody was, you know, really fuming with throughout stages last season. But I just don't think that the improvements have really got to the heart of the issue, which I still think the real issue with VAR is the lack of communication that fans inside the stadium have to all this. Like, there was probably, from the referee blowing his whistle to give Everton a penalty, probably about a 4-minute delay to then the referee then overturning his own decision, where fans in the stadium have absolutely no idea what's going on. Like, a message comes up on the screen after about a minute saying VAR's checking it, but, you know, there's no like verbal communication that fans are getting. You know, we don't get to listen into the conversations that these referees are having. And it always just seems to be the case now that whenever a referee goes over to the screen, that's it. You know, it's just going to get overturned, which I think is just, it's just madness, really, isn't it? And it really does feel to me as if, you know, it's referees sticking together in that sense. Like, you know, John Moss was the VAR official for yesterday. So John Moss has probably been in Chris Cavanagh's ear in this situation. And he's probably said to him, I think you probably should check that, you know, because, and then instantly that'll put the thought in Chris Cavanagh's mind. He's not got the pressure of being in this stadium and he doesn't think it's a pen. So do I have to change my decision now? And if he then goes to the monitor and then goes against what VAR thinks, you know, that's then two Premier League referees disagreeing with each other on the same issue. And it really seems to me as if the Premier League just don't want that. They don't want their referees to be seen disagreeing over anything. So whenever a referee goes over to the monitor, it seems that there's some sort of weird pressure that he's always got to overturn his initial decision. I think you could probably count the amount of times on one hand, the amount of times that a referee's actually stuck with his decision after going over to that monitor. And, you know, then you just go to the issue, you know, he's looking at that in slow motion. He probably looks at that however many replays over the course of like 2 minutes. If he's taking that long to look at the decision on like with so many replays, how can that be a clear and obvious error? It just doesn't make any sense to me. And then you've obviously got the bit that you mentioned there right at the end, the, you know, I think Chris quite rightly says that Everton have really been punished twice, because if the referee doesn't give a penalty there, Richarlison's got the ball, Hugo Lloris is out of his goal. I think there's maybe a defender on the line that maybe Richarlison's got to try and get the ball past, but realistically he's got a lot of the goal to aim at there. And for some reason Spurs get a drop ball when they didn't have possession of the ball. Now, I think that is written into the Premier League rules somewhere. I'm writing a piece on it later, so I need to properly research this. I do think it is written in the rules somewhere, but I think that's an absolutely ludicrous rule if that is written into the rules, to be honest, because it's not Richarlison's fault that the referees made a mistake in quotation marks there. Like, he was in possession. There's no way he should be punished again for that. So it was just an absolute bizarre collection of errors, to be honest. And you're quite right in saying that Everton fans were already on the referee's back, I think quite rightly, from a few decisions in the first half that drew a few ironic cheers from the crowd. So, you know, the referee wasn't in good standing anyway. And then just this this 5 minutes of absolute nonsense occurs. And, you know, it just really, it really disheartens you, doesn't it? And yeah, it really does bring the question back to the standard of officiating in this country. And it just does seem like it's at its lowest ebb at the minute, which is, you know, saying something considering how bad it's been over the last few years.
Preno, I really hope you watched Match of the Day 2 last night, because I know you would have been a massive fan of the segment at the end.
You know what? I had several beers after the game on yesterday. I did watch Match of the Day 2, but my eyes got heavy. I looked them up again. I suddenly saw them stand with 3-2 up. I thought, how did that happen? I probably didn't see the segments at the end. I did watch the Everton highlights, and I quite applauded the fact that they did point out what Adam's just said, that Richarlison had been punished by actually being denied, you know, a goal-scoring opportunity, having been fouled. I mean, they tried to absolve you know, the referee by suggesting that because Lloris got the faintest of touches on the ball, that meant it wasn't a foul, but he still cleaned him out afterwards. I mean, exactly the same you know, protocol existed in the Mason Holgate red card, which was correct, by the way. But, you know, because, you know, he took the ball but then followed through, you know, so he was punished. So, you know, I just don't understand how you can have, you know, sort of a difference of opinion for a penalty and not in that instance. It was just, it was a poor decision, a number of poor decisions he made. I mean, Allen was punished. There was one where he nicked the ball quite clearly away from a couple of Spurs players. And the referee seemed to think about it, and the Spurs players, you know, appealed. He clearly hadn't seen it, but then he gave the decision, and, you know, that got the crowds like sort of back up. So there were a number of like quite unconvincing decisions he made. I mean, John Moss is not one of the better Premier League referees anyway, and if he's the guy that's in his ear, you know, sort of advising him, I can only endorse what Adam said there. It clearly wasn't, you know, sort of clear and obvious error. Richarlison was punished, you know, sort of for his fairness really, and getting back up to his feet straight away, and, you know, sort of and trying to play on. But I didn't see the segment at the end, so go on, tell me what it was.
I'll have to send it to you. It's great. It's basically the Match of the Day cameras picked up on Everton fans screaming at the ref all game, but he thinks right. It's Stuart Atwell. So he's sitting there and he's going, "You're a cheat, Atwell. You might want to wear white, Atwell." And it's Chris Kavanagh. It's just amazing.
I've recorded it. I'll catch up with it a little bit later.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another man who didn't cover himself in glory, because Mason Holgate comes off the bench in midfield, which is slightly random, to be fair, but was getting an early bath a few minutes later. But kind of to talk about them both in tandem, because I suppose they do fit together, but you've got a £25 million midfielder who's finally returned to fitness on the bench, and you've got a defender who, I think it's probably fair to say, has been out of sorts in recent months and struggling to find his best form. And Rafa turns to the defender to go on in midfield. So, you know, as much as you can question that substitution in itself, though, that something at the moment just isn't clicking for Mason Holgate, is there? And it seems like he eventually took out his frustrations on, you know, what was a really poor cameo on what was a really dangerous tackle.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone comes out of this great. Obviously, think, what's Rafa thinking? Is he thinking that Gabamon is now that much of a liability after the lacklustre display of Wolves, that he now has to play a defender out of position?
Yeah.
To put him in midfield ahead of him. So you've got to wonder if sort of the vendors, if you're looking at the manager's decision there, and then you think about how does that impact on Gabamon himself? Because he's thinking, well, this guy's a defender and he's been picked ahead of me, 25 million midfielder, and he's putting a defender ahead of me. And then Holgate, I mean, I think he was a bit frustrated, wasn't he? I think he'd given the ball away a couple of times, and that just frustration boiled over. He's trying to make an impact, do something after, you know, he'd given it away a couple of times, and he's totally gone over the top. Like we say, you can't make those challenges now. I mean, it was high, it was dangerous, and I think the manager himself said, "Yeah, no complaints about that one." That's a red card, and yeah, you do wonder for Mason Holgate, because I think we just talked on this briefly last week. Wasn't too long ago, he was seen as one of the starting centre backs, and you know there was even talk of Manchester City casting an eye over him at one point. And was it a case of believing the hype about yourself too much? Because at the moment he's very much shown fourth choice. I mean, Yerry Mina's out and has been out since the last international break, and he still can't get a starting berth in there. And when he did do, obviously at the Wolves, but he looked very uncomfortable alongside Michael Keane. So yeah, it's almost like one step forward, two steps back for Mason at the moment, and where he goes from here now. It obviously was a busy festive period coming up over December, there's lots of fixtures, so the manager probably will need him at some point, but he might have to wait a little while now. Obviously he's got the suspension to serve, but when he does come back, he's certainly not going to be an automatic, but you'd imagine, for a little while now.
It is a worrying one, isn't it, Adam? And Bees has kind of said similar to what you've written in your analysis this morning about, even with a busy festive fixture list coming up for Mason Holgate, he might well be waking up this morning and looking at that fixture list and wondering where his next start would come from in the Premier League. And a player who not long ago Everton fans were really excited to see us sign him down to a new long-term contract, suddenly his immediate future looks very kind of strange. But from those minutes he was on the pitch, kind of nothing went right, did it? Do you think the tackle was born out of just pure frustration from his own performance and maybe his own situation?
I think to be honest, the tackle came from him wanting to make a little bit of an impression, because he'd only been on the pitch for, I think, was it about 8 or 9 minutes by the time he made that tackle. Obviously, as we've mentioned, he wasn't exactly playing very well up until that tackle was made. He gave the ball away in the centre of the pitch, which eventually led to Lo Celso striking the post in probably what was Tottenham's best chance of the game. So he nearly gave a goal away, having only been on the pitch for about 5 minutes. And I think when he's seen the ball with Højbjerg on the edge of the box there, he's thought to himself, "Oh, I can make a bit of an impression here. Go in for a bit of a hard tackle and try and get the fans up for it and try and get them behind me again." But he's just completely over-egged it, and he's gone in for the challenge in an absolutely reckless and needless way. And it was quite right that he got sent off. And you do look into his future now. I think that'll lead to a 3-game suspension for him for dangerous foul play. So he'll miss Everton's next 3 matches at least. And then you're looking at the fixture list. Potentially Yerry Mina's going to work his way back to full fitness. And then you look at the likes of even, let's say, Jared Branthwaite on the bench. Is there an argument that Jared Branthwaite is now going to try and push ahead of Mason Holgate? He's a very exciting young player. He's very highly rated at the club, isn't he? And why wouldn't you give him a chance if Holgate's in such bad form? Why wouldn't you give him any sort of opportunity to step up if you're going to be rotating your squad, or if you're going to have any more injury issues or anything like that? So I really do think Mason Holgate is in a really precarious situation in terms of his future at the minute, which is absolutely baffling to think. It was probably only about 2 years ago that he was really, really developing into a fantastic player. He'd broken into the Everton side towards the end of that Marco Silva's time, hadn't he? Really started to excel when Carlo Ancelotti took over. And it just seems that since the return from lockdown, maybe he's kind of just fallen off the boil and really, really lost his way. And it's really hard to put your finger on what the issue is with him. Is he similar to Michael Keane in the fact that he's really a confidence player, and his confidence is just rock bottom at the minute? It's hard to say, because he seems like he plays with a certain air of confidence and almost an arrogance about him when he's on the pitch. But it's really hard to say, because I do still think there is a really, really good player in there, but I can't really remember the last time he's fully managed to show that. in an Everton shirt, which is a real shame. And it's a time of this Everton era at the minute where he can't really afford to keep putting in poor performances like this, because, you know, if you're hoping that Ben Godfrey's going to return to full form soon, I thought he played really well yesterday. You're hoping that Michael Keane is going to return to some semblance of form again. I thought he was really good yesterday as well. Yeni Mina, when he comes back to full fitness, there's an argument that he's Everton's best centre-back. I think we've spoke on this podcast over the last couple of weeks that centre-back might be an area that Everton look to strengthen in the very near future. So where would that leave Mason Holgate's future? It certainly wouldn't be in centre mid anymore after what he did yesterday. So it's very fast turning into a really worrying situation if you're Holgate. So he needs to find form soon, but whenever he's going to get that chance to prove that again, I really, really don't know, because, you know, this is probably the lowest ebb that he's had recently, and, you know, he's been in poor form over the last few months. But, you know, I've seen a lot of fans who just think that that's the final straw with him, and I wouldn't go that far myself. But, you know, there's supporters who certainly aren't happy with it, and you can see why.
And Preno, on the decision to kind of put Holgate in ahead of Tchouaméni, it almost feels to me, is it almost a message from Rafa to Gian Felipe in terms of, you know, Delph starting ahead of you, and, you know, you're not doing enough behind the scenes, you're not doing enough at Finch Farm to warrant even a place coming on ahead of a centre back. But to focus on him for a minute, it's worrying, isn't it, that a player who will only have 2 years left on his contract at the end of the season, you know, which is normally the time a club kind of look to say, right, let's get that extended or let's move them on. For all the bad luck with injuries, he's had a really poor start to the season when he's had an opportunity to showcase his talent.
I mean, we've heard that his performances on the training pitch at Finch Farm have been erratic. You know, he's had good days training, but then he's had two or three really bad days training. And so you don't get any level of consistency. And, you know, so is that a result of his time out? You know, so possibly. But when he's being given opportunities to showcase it in football matches, he's not produced. And that Wolves performance was very, very poor. And, you know, he totally deserved, you know, sort of getting hauled off when he did. And he's clearly done nothing on the training pitch in the meantime as a reaction from that to warrant, you know, getting brought on for the last, like, 8 minutes at the weekend, you know, which is why, you know, so the manager decided, you know, so to go with Holgate. So it has got to be a concern. I mean, Raf has also made it clear that he wants people in the squad that he can rely on fitness-wise. He's been very, very frustrated by the number of injuries that, you know, he's had to deal with. He's already made one change to his fitness staff and his rehab staff. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are more changes further down the line. So he wants players he can rely on, you know, so that's why, you know, he's looked at, you know, the fitness records of Damari Gray and Townsend and Rondon before bringing them in, because he knows, you know, he's got a certain degree of consistency out of them. And if Gabamin, you know, is going to be continue to be unfortunate, you know, so with his fitness record, that'll be another mark against them as well. So, yeah, you know, Adam talked about, you know, why it's a worrying time, you know, so for Mason Holgate's future, and it is. Equally, it's a very worrying time for Gianfilippo Gabamin. I mean, this is a new manager still who's finding out about his squad, and he wants to rebuild his squad, you know, pretty much from scratch. And certainly those two players that we've mentioned there haven't done anything this season to suggest that, you know, they've got a long-term future under the new manager. I mean, Holgate was actually made skipper earlier this season against Huddersfield in the League Cup. So, you know, he's been given opportunities, he's been given responsibility, and he's not taking it. Likewise, Gabamin, you only get so many chances in the Premier League. It's a very, very unforgiving environment. And if you don't grab those chances when they're put in front of you, I'm sorry, you can't do much about it. You know, it's the manager will move on and he will bring in other players that, you know, he feels can trust or he can trust. And you have to endorse that.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And as Adam mentioned, B's an improved performance from young Ben Godfrey. Mm-hmm. A clean sheet heading into the international break will hopefully be just the remedy for him after a tough couple of weeks. You know, the mistake against Wolves kind of was high profile, but I think even he has admitted that, you know, due to COVID and other things, that his performances haven't quite been at the standards they were at last season. I know you spoke to Alan Stubbs about Godfrey specifically, yeah, as well. Do you think that's just kind of the trials and tribulations of such a young defender in the Premier League? He's going to go through these peaks and troughs almost, isn't he? But you've got to hope now he's came up the other end and we see the Ben Godfrey that we saw, you know, for pretty much the entirety of last season.
Yeah, you certainly hope so. And given the encouragement of his first season at Everton, and that, you, like I say, you've seen what he can do for whatever reasons. You call it over in America, don't it? Is it the sophomore slump, the second season syndrome, we say over here in England. Maybe it's just a bit of that. And obviously, you've mentioned the fitness issues. I mean, we don't know with the COVID how much it can affect anyone, even elite athletes. You know, the amount of time it might take you to recover and get back to those levels. But yeah, maybe if he hit a real low point at Wolves with that, you know, the unforced error, the back pass, hopefully that was his lowest point and he can come out the other end, because he's a player who offers just so much. I mean, a lot more than maybe we realised when he first came into the club. He's always obviously got this issue with this versatility, whereas he's been depended upon to go play right back, go play left back.
Yeah.
And whilst that's helping the team and helping his manager, I think that was something Alan Stubbs said to me at the start of the season. It wasn't necessarily helping Godfrey himself, and that might have been part of the reason why, you know, he was out of position and made that mistake at Wolves. So back at centre-half, and he very much sees himself as a centre-back. You hope he can flourish there, because for all those inconsistencies and those sort of question marks we've got in that position for Everton right now, he does offer the brightest long-term solution in that position. I mean, you dare say even if he sticks around, he's a potential future Everton captain. He's that sort of personality about him. You know, he's got a bit of leadership and leads by example. So, yeah, he's a very important player, you'd hope, for the club going forward. So, yeah, the sooner he can sort of get a run of consistent matches, like the sort of performance he made against Tottenham Hotspur, if he can do that on a regular basis, I mean, it can only help the team and whoever's alongside him.
And from one exciting young player, Adam, we should probably touch on Anthony Gordon in the same week that he was named in the England under-21 squad for the first time. I think when we're talking about players and the impact they've had so far this season, that it's definitely been a positive season to the campaign from Tony Gordon, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was really important that he made it into the starting lineup, because I think that really helped the atmosphere from the start, didn't it? We've had a whole week of Everton fans essentially saying that Anthony Gordon needs to start this game. He had a really good cameo coming on against Wolves, nearly scored with a really good header at the near post on that game. Just looked lively in general, didn't he, throughout that Wolves match. So I think it was really important that he was given a start by Rafa Benitez. And I think he worked really hard, didn't he? Like, I think it's a point that I made in last week's podcast, that it's really important for him to look like at least that he's working hard off the ball, especially, you know, tracking back, you know, making important challenges and stuff like that, because he knows he's in direct competition essentially with Alex Iwobi, who doesn't really do that defensive work that you would necessarily associate with, you know, Gordon, who, you know, looks very energetic and getting back and putting in slide tackles and stuff like that. I can't think of a time that Alex Iwobi's put in a slide tackle. It's just not part of his game, is it? His game is very much, you know, dribble at opponents, find little intricate passes sort of thing. So, I think Gordon worked really hard. I think Everton in general were just lacking a bit of creativity, and I think Gordon was subject to that as well. He had a little moment at the start of the second half where he got on the end of a cross from the flank. Was it Damari Gray's cross? Like, really chipped cross to the back post, and he had a bit of a volleyed attempt, which he just didn't quite get hold of. He had a couple of other, you know, half opportunities to maybe have a little bit of a shot. He's obviously quite desperate for that first goal, isn't he? But I think the big thing that he can probably take out of this is that he was given 90 minutes by Rafa Benitez. And I think that really was a sign from the manager that he really does rate Gordon, because going into this match, the main thing that Benitez has been saying, this is why I'm not playing Gordon as much, is that he doubted his staying power at this level over the course of 90 minutes, didn't he? And this was, I think, Rafa Benitez saying to him, right, I'm giving you this 90 minutes now. I do have faith in you. Let's see where you can take this forward. Because especially when we're talking about when Mason Holgate got sent off, for example, Benitez brought on Gubaman and he took off Damari Gray rather than taking off Anthony Gordon. He could have easily took off Gordon. I think Gordon was actually getting quite tired from probably like the 70th minute onwards, I would suggest. So I was maybe anticipating that Gordon was going to go off before that. But he chose to take off Gray rather than Gordon. And I think that is a certain show of faith from the manager, which I think is really important for him. And he's going into this international break now. He's going to play with the under-21s. Hopefully he can get some minutes. Lee Carsley can give him some minutes for the 21s. But it's all just looking really promising and rosy for Anthony Gordon at the minute, which is really nice to see. You know, we've had obviously a pretty dire run of performances and results in general for Everton over the last few weeks, but Anthony Gordon's managed to sort of transcend that on an individual basis and on a personal level. He really seems to be going up step by step now, which is really, really promising to see, and let's hope he can continue that for the rest of the season.
And Preno, all it feels like we've done on the podcast this season is talk about upcoming international breaks. Another one is upon us, but again, I think, you know, we've stopped the rot of defeat to a positive point against, you know, still a team with a lot of talented players like Spurs have. And hopefully the international break brings everyone back fit. We're closer to seeing Dominic Calvert-Lewin back in action.
Yeah, you can't underestimate how big a miss he's been this season. I mean, there were a couple of occasions in the first half when good quality balls were put across the box, and they were the kind of, you know, balls that he was scoring from, you know, so tail end of last season, you know, so beginning of this season, you know, so diving in late, getting on his head on the end of things. So, yeah, you know, the international break, they're so frustrating. Not only do you have no football for a fortnight, but you've also got players jetting off here, there and everywhere, and you've no idea quite, you know, so how they're going to come back. I just dearly hope that we don't have any issues, you know, thrown upon us, you know, with players coming back injured, because, you know, we've got enough to, you know, sort of contend with as it is. Calvert-Lewin does sound like it's going to be a little while yet, though. Decore, I think, is not too far away, as he's a few weeks away. So, you know, so maybe that could be, you know, sort of a positive after the international break, because, you know, there's an interesting run of fixtures coming up, shall we say. You know, we looked at December and thought, oh my God, that's going to be an absolutely, you know, sort of, you know, maelstrom of games. But Brentford have had that, you know, so early season flourish. It's dipped a little bit now, you know, and if Norwich can go there and win, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't be, you know, sort of thinking about doing something similar in that fixture. Manchester City, that everybody almost automatically, you know, just gives up on, you know, it's going to be being beaten at home by Crystal Palace. And, you know, so Palace got a couple of decisions in their favour that day, but equally they've been, you know, playing very, very well and, you know, deserved their luck on the day. So again, you can look at that. I mean, only a couple of weeks ago, I was watching our performance against Watford, Liverpool's performance against Man United, and thinking, oh my God, I don't want to go to the derby. I don't want to watch the derby. But now, having seen a performance full of commitment and passion, you know, on Sunday, and Liverpool suffering down at West Ham, you're thinking, well, maybe, you know, so another, you know, so good Goodison atmosphere, and maybe a referee that actually, you know, so works in our favour this time, which we never seem to have, you know, so what could happen? So, yeah, you know, there's plenty to look forward to. Unfortunately, it's just a fortnight away, and we've got to get through another interminable international break with high-profile matches against, is it Albania and San Marino? Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's bad. It's
not
bad.
Yeah. The San Marino game, Dave.
No, not at all. But there's Royal Blue podcasts to entertain you, because we'll have a couple more of these during the international break. I'm sure we can think of something to talk about and you know, so try to keep people's, you know, so attention focused on Everton matters.
Well, Dave has just convinced me that we'll be top by the end of December, so I think that's a good place to leave it before we return next week. And as Dave says, we will hopefully take your mind away from the pain of the international break. More Everton-based discussion. Thank you so much for listening. We've been the Royal Blue Podcast. You can find us on Facebook, or you can follow us and message us on Twitter if you feel the need. Get your questions in for the international break if there's anything you'd like to see us discuss. And thank you again for listening. We are the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.